In the first public appearance that he made, and the longest presentation of the truth that he ever delivered, Yosha established who he was, why he was here, what he was going to accomplish. It's astonishing that the Sermon on the Mount, as it is called, isn't heeded by Christians, that they don't listen to it, that they don't read it, they don't consider it. For if they did, if they bothered to listen to what Yosha actually said, even as it's poorly translated from their English Bibles, they would know that the basis of their religion was a fraud. That there is no way that Paul told the truth when he said that the Torah had been abrogated, that the Torah had no longer had any merit, that we had, that Christians had moved beyond the Torah to the gospel of grace. If you listen to what he had to say, that you know that's just not even remotely possible. That Yosha would have to be an avowed liar for Paul to be telling the truth. And if Yosha is an avowed liar, Yosha is the actual name of the person that Christians mess up his name and call him Jesus Christ. It wasn't Greek. He didn't have a last name of Christ. And the name Jesus isn't written out on any pre-Constantine manuscript. In fact, the name Jesus wasn't even invented until the 17th century. It's completely bogus. But when you listen to what Yosha had to say, it's impossible to be a Christian. Not if you're willing to be rational. And it's not just that he said that, you know, I didn't come to do away with the Torah, which is exactly what Paul wrote, that, you know, he came to do away with the Torah. And so Paul's writings in Galatians and again in Romans are the antithesis of what Yosha actually said as he began his Sermon on the Mount. But beyond that, as he concludes it, Yosha is saying that, you know, that the broad way, the way that is crafted by men and that is popular leads to death. There is no broader way than Christianity. It's the most popular religion in the history of humankind. It's the most popular religion right now today. The only two rivals are communism, the religion of man, if you will, and Islam. But Christianity is larger than both. And Yosha says that the popular way leads to death, to the destruction of your soul. And it's only a very narrow, very restrictive, very unpopular path that leads to life. Therefore, the path to life cannot be the Christian religion, according to Yosha. And if Yosha, since he is arguably the basis of that religion, he really isn't, but they claim that he is. You can't have a religion that's based on an overt contradiction of his foundational statements. And yet this is what he said. This then actually is the Torah. This then is the prophets. Under the auspices of free will, you should choose at some point in time to enter, personally engaging by moving through the narrow, specific, seldom tread, and exacting door. Because broad, man-made and crafted to be wide open is the door, and spacious is the way, which leads, which misleads, and which separates unto utter destruction. Profound, isn't it? Narrow. Extremely restrictive. Exacting. Seldom tread. Very specific. is the door to life, and that yet broad and man-made, crafted to be wide open. Plastis is the Greek word that he's translated as having actually spoken this in Hebrew. It means molded, formed, at the basis of plastic. Spacious, encompassing, widely accepted is the way, which misleads and separates to utter destruction. And many are those who are influenced into moving while suffering the consequences of entering through it. Yosha just said that false hope is not a good thing. It leads to one's destruction. That religions which are popular and which offer false hope are devastating. There is no benefit in offering someone false hope. And that's what any popular religious institution is doing. The Roman Catholic Church is offering 1.2 billion people false hope. The Eastern Orthodox Church and its variety of institutions is offering about a half a billion people false hope. Protestant denominations, probably another half a billion people false hope. They're leading those who believe their lies to their destruction, separated from God. That's not good. It's bad. That doesn't make religion good. It makes religion evil, counterproductive. He would go on to say, certainly, the specific doorway has strict requirements. It is narrow. It's seldom tread. It's an exacting passageway. And it completely goes against the crowd to the point of persecution. The one way which leads, separating those guided unto life. But very few are those who find it. Now, if Islam or Christianity, communism, Buddhism, Hinduism, they're all very popular. If they were the way to life, if they provided a doorway unto life, then Yosha would be a liar. That's just the bottom line here. There's no way to get around that. What he is saying is that rather than these popular religious paths providing the doorway to life, he is saying exactly the opposite. That the popular way to life is narrow. There are strict requirements. Very few people find it. It's an exacting passageway. So where would we find that passageway, do you suppose? He began this by affirming the Torah, did he not? He began this by saying, this is the Torah. The first words of this train of thought was, this is the Torah. Telling us that the broad path of the religious and popular paths lead to the destruction of the soul, but there is a narrow, very specific pathway in this Torah that leads to life. That path, of course, would be the covenant. It has five terms and conditions. Those are its strict requirements. That's why it is so unpopular. Now, don't misunderstand. Yosha did not say that Christianity was destructive because it's unpopular. Or because it's popular, I should say. But only that the path to life is unpopular. Christianity is deadly because it's based on Shaul's man-made and artificial path, the broad path of faith. I am not trying to rub salt into an open wound. If you're still a Christian, but I would be remiss if I didn't remind you that Yahweh specifically revealed that there would be a broad path, a duplicitous and improper way associated with Paulos, the one who chose the name Lowly and Little. As a result, Christianity is the very plague of death that Yahweh condemned with these words in Habakkuk 2:4-6 that Paul himself directed our attention to. Yahweh says, pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. His soul is not right or straightforward in him. So through trust and reliance, by being firmly established and being upheld by that which is dependable and truthful, those who are upright and vindicated shall live. Moreover, because the intoxicating and inebriating spirit of the man of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal is such a high-minded moral failure, and his is an arrogant and meritless presumption, he will not rest. He will not find peace, nor will he live. Whoever is open to the broad path, the improper way associated with Shaul. The same broad path, folks. Yahweh would go on to speak of the broad path associated with Shaul and say, he and his soul are like the plague of death. And so those who are brought together by him, receiving him, they will never be satisfied. All of the Gentiles will gather together unto him, all of the people from different races and places in different places. But they do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word, they lift up as taunts to ridicule, with implied associations that mock, controlling through comparison and counterfeit, along with elusive sayings and with derisive words arrogantly conveyed. There are hard and perplexing questions that need to be asked of him, and double dealings to be known regarding him. They should say, woe to the one who claims to be great as so as to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi when none of this applies to him. God concludes the comments in Habakkuk 2:4-6 by saying, for how long will they make pledges based upon his significance, becoming burdened by his testimony? He named the individual as Shaul. It was obvious that he was talking about Paul all along because of all of the comments he made about them, but he named him. There's no excuse if you're a Christian. You can read Habakkuk 2:4-6 yourself. Now, I'm sure in your English Bible, they're going to render Shaul as Sheol, which is the Hebrew word for hell. But the problem with doing that is that all the way through this testimony, from beginning to end, it's all written in third person, masculine, singular. It speaks of a singular individual. It even speaks of the individual's soul. Sheol is a place that doesn't have a soul. Sheol is a place cannot be considered third person, singular, masculine. It's not a him. Well, in context, now that we have considered what God has revealed, Yahusha has identified the Torah as God's gift and as the lone path to life. He has said that all other paths lead to destruction, needlessly squandering a person's existence. There's no getting around the fact that this means that the popular paths, and none are more popular than Christianity, lead to the death and destruction of those who follow their edicts. Everyone who has been beguiled by Eastern Orthodox Christianity, everyone who has been beguiled by Roman Catholicism, everyone who has been beguiled by one strain or another of Protestant Christianity, every single one has squandered their soul. There are no exceptions. There will be no Muslims in heaven. There'll be no Christians in heaven. There will be no communists in heaven. there will be no Hindus in heaven. The only invitees in heaven will be those who chose the narrow way, who embraced the specific requirements of participating in Yahweh's family. You'll find those requirements in the one place that Yahusha is labeling as the gift, the enduring gift, the Torah. In the first book of the Torah, you can read about how Yahweh engaged in a relationship with Abraham based upon family. You can read what God asked of Abraham, what Abraham agreed upon, and what Yahweh promised Abraham. And when you read these things, you will understand the narrow way to God. You'll understand specifically what he's offering. You will understand the restrictions imposed on the path to life. And these restrictions exist because if heaven was like earth, it would be eternal misery. If God did not restrict those who are religious and political and militaristic from his home, then we would have to live with this hell forever. And so the first requirement of the covenant is to walk away from religion. Paul is asking us to walk away from that which is, or God is asking us to walk away from the likes of Pauline doctrine, which is popular, away from Christianity. It is only by walking away from religion that we can walk to God and have a relationship with him. As an interesting aside, Yahusha's instructions regarding eternal life encourage us to begin by entering through a specific doorway. And that is because the first of the seven steps that we can walk as Yahweh's covenant children to our salvation begins by answering Yahweh's invitation to walk through the doorway that is labeled Passover. This doorway, featuring the blood of the Passover lamb, initiated the exodus from the crucible of Egypt, the liberation of God's people from their enslavement in the oppressive human, political, and religious schemes of Egypt. It represents the doorway to God's home. And Yahusha, as the Passover lamb, as the living embodiment of that doorway, represents the first of seven steps to the final result, which is ultimately entry, God's home, and living with him. Also relevant, the reason that there are strict requirements associated with this specific doorway is because it is only available to the children of the covenant. And to participate in this family relationship with our Heavenly Father, we engage by accepting its five very specific conditions. Yahusha was not finished warning Christians about the consequence of disregarding the Torah, however. And we will return. We will consider what else he had to say. I'm going to share with you what Yahusha said, warning Christians about Paul. But I must tell you that there is a sadness in my voice. I was viewing a news feed during the commercial break. And the news feed that I was viewing was from the International Herald, which is a part of the New York Times. And while they aren't presenting who is Boko Haram, which would be extraordinarily valuable, they do have a lead article on who are the girls that were kidnapped. And you can see their pictures. You can read their doodles in their notebooks. You can listen to their goals in life. You can look at their pictures of their favorite dresses. You can see their faces. And then you have to contemplate what the religion of Islam is doing to them. I'm not normally one who likes to focus on the victims. I like to expose and condemn the perpetrators But in this particular case, it behooves us to look at the victims and then to try to understand how evil a person has to be to rape them, to murder them, to torture them, to take them away from their families. Yehoshua continued his Sermon on the Mount with these words. He was, of course, speaking them in Hebrew. I will share them with you in English. At the present time, you should all be especially alert, being on your guard by closely examining and carefully considering, thereby turning away from the false prophets who come to you currently at this moment, appearing before you from within by dressing up in sheep's clothing. Yet they are actually exceptionally self-promoting, self-serving, and swindling wolves. The first word in this statement, translated from Hebrew into Greek as proshete. It's a compound of pros, to one's advantage with respect to or towards someone or something, and echo, that which is accepted, grasped onto, possessed, considered, or regarded. It speaks of an organization or a person that someone might cling to or join in. Therefore, by juxtaposing proshete, a cautionary and guarded examination and consideration of pseudo-prophetes, false prophets, and proshete, institutions they would have you embrace and join, with apo, disassociation and separation, as he is translated from Hebrew into Greek. Yahweh, through Yahusha, told us to walk away from religious organizations like churches. Further implicating Paulos, while he got his lone prediction wrong when he misrepresented the Teruah harvest and claimed in his first letter to the Thessalonians that the harpazo, to use his term, snatching away or rapture, would occur during his lifetime. You can read that in 1 Thessalonians 4:17, thereby making him a false prophet by any standard. Pseudo-prophetess is less about errantly predicting the future than it is indicative of someone who deliberately deceives by falsely claiming to have been inspired by God. Therefore, because Shaul, known as Paul's message, is consistently deceitful, it is overwhelmingly obvious that he lied about his inspiration. You can't be credible in divine inspiration when your testimony is overtly condemning of God's testimony. Also, this admonition was recorded in the present tense, which is to say that pseudo-prophetess, that individual, the false prophet, was present. He was currently lurking in their midst. And it is relevant because, according to Shaul, he was in this very place at this very time, learning to be religious at a school for rabbis. And since the only false prophet of any significance during this time and in this place is also the most significant false prophet of all time, there's no mistaking Shaul, Paul, as the wolf in sheep's clothing. There's no other viable candidate. Now, Paul had his accomplices, particularly Timothy. And so it is in the plural. But he's the wolf. Now, that's not to say that there weren't other Jews who led people astray in the name of religion. Rabbi Akiva shaped Judaism into the religion which is practiced today. But he never claimed to be a prophet, and he lived a full century later, so he was not in their midst present tense. Maimonides, the man who codified Judaism's 13 pillars, wasn't a prophet either. In fact, he said he wasn't a prophet. And he wrote over a millennia, 1,000 years later, in Islamic Egypt, not in Israel. Constantine and Theodosius, the warring founders of Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox Christianity in the early and late 4th century, could never be mistaken for a lamb. Neither was a prophet. Neither was a Christian or a Jew. So they too would be disqualified for many reasons. Therefore, who else other than Paulos and his associates meet this criterion? But there is more. By Yosha's definition, Shaul, as a Benjamite, qualified as a wolf. Paulos claimed to be from the tribe of Benjamin in Romans. Romans 11:1, for indeed I am an Israelite from the seed of Abraham, from the tribe of Benjamin. And this heads up here from God. This is from the Torah, Bereshith, Genesis 49:27. Benjamin is a wolf, viciously tearing apart, continually mangling and actually killing, plucking the life out of his victims. In the early part of the day, consistently devouring his prey. And during the dark of the night at the end of the day, he divides and destroys, apportioning and distributing that which has been spoiled. There were many Benjamites. There is only one man known to have publicly proclaimed to have been from the tribe of Benjamin, who was present in Jerusalem during the time Yahusha delivered his instruction on the mount. Beyond this, Shaul, who was learning to be a rabbi at the time, also admitted to faking his true identity, which is the very reason and the very essence, I should say, of a wolf in sheep's clothing. Proof of Paul's willingness to change his outward appearance and to take an advantage of an unsuspecting audience is found in one of Paul's own confessions. I'll read now from 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And I became to the Jews like a Jew in order that I might profit by procuring an advantage over Jews. To those under the Torah, in such a way to show a weak relationship under the Torah, not being himself under the Torah, for the purpose that to those under the Torah, I might make a profit by procuring an advantage. To those Torahless, and thus without the Torah, in such a way to show a relationship with the Torahless, not being Torahless of God, to the contrary, making a contrast in the Torah of Christu, in order that I might make a profit by procuring an advantage and winning over those without the Torah. I came to exist to the unable and morally weak, incapacitated and inadequate, in order that those impotent and sick I might make a profit by procuring an advantage over. To everyone I have become every kind of thing, in order that surely, by all means, some I might save. Folks, even Machiavelli, the man who postured himself and his immoral notion that the ends justifies the means, he himself wasn't this belligerent. And you'll notice Paulos is asserting that he is the Savior, able to save anyone and everyone. This, of course, would be in direct conflict with God in tactics, capability, and in numbers. God didn't say that he might save anyone and everyone. And God has no rival in salvation. Only he can save. While the combination of God's warning and Paul's admissions are devastating, leaving Paul and his associates as the only viable and known culprits, there was a subtlety in Yosha's depiction of the wolf. He described the predator using a derivative of the same term Paulo selected in his present tense rapture, the rapture that was going to occur during his lifetime. He used the Greek word harpazo. It was such an odd choice for Paul, especially considering harpazo's negative connotations, that by being translated using this public declaration, what God is saying is that this harpazo, this vicious snatching away, is exactly what the wolf was going to do. Yahweh used that same word to direct our attention to Paul's one and only prophecy, the one he got wrong. He's doing everything he can to draw our attention to this problem. He's trying to awaken you to the wolf in sheep's clothing. And there is but one candidate, Paul, the author of half of the Christian New Testament. You know, I don't suppose that Yahshua could have made this message any clearer for us. He told us we could rely on the Torah, and he told us whom we should not trust, revealing that a self-serving insider would feign an alliance with him so that he could more easily snatch souls away from God. He provided a warning. He, of course, was speaking of Paul and of those who have allied themselves with him. This is especially poignant because on another occasion, Yosha, they're really the same. They're not the same in terms of Yosha as a set-apart manifestation of Yahweh. They're not equivalent. But it's try to make this clear for those who may be listening for the first time. While Yosha and Yahweh are comprised of the same stuff, they are not the same amount of the same stuff. It's kind of like if you had a flake of gold on your desk and a mountain of gold out there in your yard. Gold's gold. Same thing, just not the same amount of the same thing. And that would really be the difference between Yahweh and Yahusha. Yahusha is a small fleck, a small glimmer of Yahweh. He spoke of the comparative influence he would have versus Paulus. God's statement is one of the reasons that I consider Paul to be the most influential, although not in a positive way, man who ever lived. Yosha revealed, I myself have come in the name of the Father, and yet you do not receive me. But when another comes in his own name, that individual you will actually receive. If you're a Christian, he's speaking to you. He came in the name of his Father. His Father is Yahweh. You didn't receive him. You discard him. You changed his name. You changed his title. You disassociated him from his Father. You took him out of the context of the Torah. You didn't receive him. You've shunned him. You don't meet with him. Any one of the seven times a year he asked you to meet with him. You don't participate in his covenant. You discard his Torah testimony. But another, he came in his own name. He didn't even come in the name that he was given at birth, which was Shaul. He changed his name to a Roman name, to Paulos. And yet, as a Christian, you receive him. You quote his testimony all the time. You study it in your churches. You listen to sermons on it. You accept what he said is true, even when what he says is directly contradictory to what Yosha said. When you listen to God says, I myself have come in the name of my Father, and yet you do not receive me. But when another comes in his own name, that individual you will actually receive. What does it make you think? Why don't you tell me who came in their own name that masses of people throughout time over these last 2,000 years have received? Who created his own name, changing his birth name, regarding the same subject that Yahusha is talking about, that billions have received? Who besides Paul? If you're a Christian, think about that. Who besides Paul fits this depiction? How tragic it is that you're unwilling to receive Yahusha by the name that he was given. Yahweh saves. The title that he was given, Maaseiah, the work of Yahweh. That you won't listen to what he had to say when he affirmed the Torah. He was Torah observant. And yet, instead, you receive the man who chose the Roman name, Paulos. And you listen to him. Why? Is it nothing but false hope? Ought you, for the first time in your life, start questioning him? Isn't it past time that you listened to God and chose to trust him rather than this man that contradicted him? May Yah bless. We'll return to this subject at this time tomorrow.